sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy some adventure with Frank Sinatra, starring in Rocky Fortune. But first, some laughs at the expense of the contestants with Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life. You Bet Your Life opened a whole new field for Groucho Marx, who otherwise might have competed with Milton Berle as radio's most notable failure. It took a promoter like John Grudel to figure out what was wrong. Grudel happened to be in the wings one day when Marx teamed up with Bob Hope. Hope accidentally dropped his script. Marx put his foot on it. Then Marx dropped his script, and the two finished out the skit in a frantic session of ad-libbing. You Bet Your Life drifted from all other quiz shows in that the quiz was mere window dressing for the antics of the quizmaster. By its third year, the show had arrived in radio's top 10 and won the Peabody Award, first award ever given to a comedian on a quiz show. In 1949, You Bet Your Life moved to CBS and then made its way to television, where the series continued on NBC up until 1959. We turn with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Groucho Marx starring in You Bet Your Life, another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is sky. S-K-Y.
Ready.
You bet your life. The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
I wonder what ever happened to that red-headed girl.
Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx!
Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,500 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman is first to try for it.
Just before we went on the air, we asked if there were any young people present who'd like to get married someday. Now, our studio audience selected Miss Frankie Costoletto and policeman Bob Selman. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Miss Castelletto?
That's right.
Frank, I'll call you Frankie, huh?
Yes.
Where are you from, Frankie?
I was born somewhere on Brooklyn Avenue here in Los Angeles.
What do you mean you were born somewhere along Brooklyn Avenue?
Well, we were going to hospital, and I know that on my birth certificate it just says Brooklyn Avenue.
Do you root for the Dodgers? How old are you, Frankie?
25.
You're a young-looking girl for 25. And police, you're a policeman?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Selman, Bob Selman.
Yes, sir.
How old are you?
I'm 27, Groucho.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
I was born on Lake Superior, in Duluth, Minnesota.
You were born on Lake Superior?
Yes, sir. I was born on the lake.
What are you, a whitefish? What do you mean you were born on Lake Superior?
Well, I was born on Lake Superior. My folks were on a fishing trip, and...
Did your old man go on fishing while this was... And what do you do for a living?
I'm a librarian.
Uh-huh. What kind of a librarian are you?
Public librarian.
What's the difference between a public library and a and a private library?
Well,
oh, I have a library at home.
Well, we
I don't have any books in it. But... Good place to hide booze. And...
Well, when we think of a private library...
You think very often of a private library?
Well, private libraries are usually corporation libraries. They have sort of a restricted clientele, but we like to see everybody at the public library.
I always think of a private library, you know. I always think of a kind of an elderly man in a smoking jacket sitting there with a knife in his back. And, usually around midnight. They never read, those fellas. They're always sitting there with knives in their back. You're not married, huh?
No, I'm not married.
Bob, why aren't you married?
Not on my salary, Groucho.
Would you like to get married, Bob?
Someday I plan to, yes, sir.
When?
Well, as soon as I can afford it.
You mean you're going to stay a bachelor all your life? Have you ever thought of including Frankie here in your plans?
Well, I just met her, Groucho.
Well, you're a cop, aren't you? Wait till she breaks the law and then pinch her. And Miss Castelletto will tell you a thing or two. You're still a policeman, aren't you, Bob?
Yes, sir.
What kind of a cop are you?
I'm a probationary officer.
You're on probation?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, you're on your probation, Groucho, until you've proven yourself to your superior officers.
You're under constant observation?
Yes, sir, I'm under constant observation. Mm-hmm.
You mean you cracked?
No, sir, I have to prove myself first.
You have to watch yourself every minute, huh?
Watch myself every minute.
And while you're admiring yourself in the clothing store, across the street, the crooks are robbing the bank, I suppose. Miss Castelletto, what do you think of a man who's half-cracked, under observation, and goes around pinching people?
I think he's cute.
I may be wrong, Bob, but it seems to me that you're more than casually interested in Frankie here. Why don't you ask her phone number? Go ahead, don't be bashful.
I already have it, Groucho.
See, Frankie, the long arm of the law is slipping around your waist already. Frankie, truly, does he really have your phone number?
Yes, Groucho.
Why'd you give it to him, huh?
I don't know. He asked me. I'm used to answering questions.
Ah, the training these young policemen get nowadays. Remember, she's a librarian there now, Bob.
Yes,
she can read you like a book. Well, I've kidded our policeman tonight, but he knows I didn't mean a word of it. I'm sure we've become old and trusted friends, Bob.
Yes, sir.
And eventually we'll spend a lot of time together. Now, in just 1 minute, the two of you will play You Bet Your Life for the $1,500 question. Now, let's see if a policeman and a librarian will get the chance at the $1,500. Fenneman, bring them up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room off stage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
You're nothing on me, Fenneman. I don't know what's going on out here either. Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected stars and current movies as your category. Is that right? Here's your first question. You have $20. How much are you going to try?
Ten.
Who plays opposite Rhonda Fleming in The Great Lover?
Bob Hope.
Bob Hope is correct.
And they're off to a good start with $30.
Now you got $30. How much are you going to try?
Ten.
No, let's go.
20.
Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. Who is the star of 12 O'Clock High?
Gregory Peck.
Gregory Peck is right.
They're on their way now. They have $50.
Here's your third question. You got 50. How much are you going to try of the 50?
$30.
Who plays opposite George Brent and Robert Young in Bride for Sale?
Claudette Colbert.
Claudette Colbert is right!
They're really on the way now. They have $80, Groucho.
How much of the 80 will you try?
20 enough?
No, way up. All of it?
Okay. Who co-stars with Wanda Hendrix and Orson Welles in Prince of Foxes?
Tyrone Power.
Tyrone Power!
And they wind up with $160.
Thanks and good luck. Stick around now. You still might get the chance at the big question.
Groucho, the secret word is still sky. Perhaps our next couple will say it.
Well, who is next?
A television expert and a housewife, selected by our studio audience just before we went on the air. And here they come, Mrs. Olive Rusuk and Mr. Clifford Wong. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mrs. Oliver Rusuk, is that right?
Rusuk.
Rusuk. Where are you from?
I'm from Rock Island, Illinois.
And you, Mr. Wong, you're in television?
That's right.
There's an often we have people from show business here. What shows are you on, Mr. Wong?
I'm not on any show.
Oh, out of work, eh? What was your last television job?
Well, I repaired a console set today, this afternoon.
Let me get this straight. You fix television sets?
That's right.
Well, what makes television work?
Well, the... both the... Well, sync pulses and the blanking pulses were transmitted by the transmitting station. It's transmitted on the horizontal polarized plane. Mm-hmm. And it's received by the receiver. And it's detected at the...
Well, I think the secret of television is pretty safe with you, huh? Mrs. Rusuk, let's forget the whole thing. What does your husband do, Mrs. Rusuk?
He's an ex-musician.
An ex-musician?
Uh-huh.
We've got 15 of them back here.
It'd be a good place for him to join, wouldn't it?
What do you mean he's an ex-musician? Does he make a living not playing an instrument?
Yes.
What does he do now?
He's working for the school board now.
Does he play xylophone?
Oh, no. Once in a while.
What did he play before?
Well, he played a banjo.
And did he woo you with the banjo?
Uh-huh.
How?
Well, that isn't how I met him. My father lived on a farm, and I was visiting him, and I wanted to learn how to drive a car, but he didn't want to teach me, so he was taking a nap, and that afternoon, he was going to have this young lad come and help him with the haying. And
this is the Eddie Peabody character.
Yes. So when he came and my father was asleep, he decided he might as well take a nap, too, so he crawled up on the haystack. And so I was out driving the car around in the hayfield because that way I wouldn't hit anybody or anything. And so I rutted into the haystack, and I bounced him out, and he landed on the hood of the car in front of the windshield. And that's how I met him.
Did he have his banjo with him at the time?
No.
Now, Clifford Wong, I'll just call you Static, huh? Tell me, as a television repairman, just what do?
Repair television sets.
Who do you work for, Mr. Wong?
Munch Televisions.
Well, if you had to do it over again, would you go into the television business, Mr.
Well,
Wong?
Well, yes, I think I will, but only on your side of the business is where there's money involved.
You want to be where I am, where the money is that it? All right, you asked for it. Go ahead. This is your program, huh? You're the comedian. I'm the contestant. Go ahead. Interview me. I think this is such a soft racket. You try it, bro.
All right. What's your name?
Puddin' Tame. Ask me again, and I'll tell you the same.
Well, what do you do for
How do you like it? Go ahead. Ask me another question.
What do you usually do for a living?
I'm in television. I fix television sets. Now, since you're me, go ahead. Tell a joke.
Huh? Well, I tell you, something funny happened to me on the way to the studio tonight.
Well, there's going to be a lot of radios going to need fixing after this.
Well,
go ahead, shoot, Mr. Wong.
Well, on my way to the studio tonight, a man stopped me.
Uh-huh.
He says, could you let me have 30 cents so I could boot my family? Feeling sorry for the man, I handed him 30 cents. I said, where is your family? This is the answer he gave me, in the movies.
Well, How old a man was he, do you remember?
No, I don't.
What was the movie, do you remember that?
Tell me.
Now, you were going to tell us a joke. Go ahead with the joke. Huh?
That is the joke.
That's the joke? Okay, have it your own way. What do you do for a living?
I repair television sets.
Well, stick to it. That's where the big money is. Well, after talking to you two, I'm convinced television is still around the corner. Now, let's see if you can run your $20 into more than the other two couples and get a crack at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question later. I can't tell you how much they won, but George Fenneman is offstage to remind our listeners.
The policeman and the librarian won $160.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. What question category did you select?
A.
Music by Jimmy McHugh. Is that right? Mm-hmm. And how much are you going to risk?
Ten.
Talk right
ten.
Up into
ten.
The microphone now.
Ten.
Because Bing
ten
Crosby
dollars.
Is listening, and we don't want old Baldy to miss anything here. You're going to bet $10. Here's your first question. Jerry Fielding plays. You give me the name of the song. Play, Jerry.
Sunny side of the street.
On the sunny side of the street.
$30.
Okay, now you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. How much of the 30 will you try?
20.
How much? $20. What is the name of this song? What is the answer you two have decided upon, huh? Take a stab at it.
Something
about the sky, isn't it? Riding around that haystack suddenly made you lucky, Mr. Russell. You just said sky, and that's the secret word tonight, so you win $100 in cash, compliments of the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America. By the way, the name of that song is I Feel a Song Coming On. They have practically nothing outside of that $100.
$10, right? Groucho.
You've sunk down to $10, and here's your third question. How much of the 10 are you going to bet?
I will bet $5.
$5. Give me the title of this McHugh song. Okay, Jerry?
Don't blame me.
Don't blame me.
Don't blame me. All right, $15, Groucho.
Now you're riding down the roller coaster. You got 15 smackers. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet?
Let's bet it all.
Here we go. What's the name of this song?
I Need You Feeling the Love, Baby.
Stop. And they wind up with $30. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. All right, let's have our third couple, George. And it won't be long before we know who gets the big question. Who's ahead so far, Fenneman?
The librarian and the policeman with $160. And the secret word is still sky. We invited some auctioneers and some square dance callers to the show tonight. And here comes the couple selected just before we went on the air. Auctioneer Ken Porter and square dance caller Irene Hanford meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, kids. And if one of you says the secret word, he wins $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. We have an auctioneer and a square dance caller, eh? Miss Irene Hanford?
That's right.
You're a square dance caller, is that right?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that a kind of a peculiar occupation for a woman?
Well, it might be, but I think women can do anything men can.
You really think so, huh? I'd like to see you get into the steam room at the Yelts Club. Where are you from, Irene?
Los Angeles.
And are you married?
No, I'm not. I'm a miss.
You're a miss, eh? Well, a miss is as good as a mile. I always say. No, I don't always say that. In fact, I never say that. I haven't said that in years. You're the auctioneer, Mr. Porter? Where are you from?
I'm from Champaign, Illinois.
How long have you been in California, Mr. Porter?
Well, I settled here in about 1945.
What'd you settle for, 90 cents a month? As an auctioneer, 90 cents on the dollar, I suppose. Huh? Are you married, or haven't you ever felt yourself going, gone?
Huh? Yes, I'm married.
You are married, huh? How'd you meet your wife? Did you pick her up at an auction?
When I got my discharge out of Klamath Falls, Oregon, I came down here to visit.
Out of where?
Klamath Falls, Oregon.
What were you doing up there?
I was in rehabilitation camp up there.
Oh. What do you do as in a rehabilitation camp?
Well, I was a Marine Corps. They was getting me ready for the public, I guess.
What would you say is the most important qualification for an auctioneer?
Well, 95% of it is psychology, softening up to people.
Well, is that what you use the hammer for?
No, I mean, you gotta, tell jokes.
I'm still trying to recover from the last joke I had. Okay, let's hear one of the jokes, eh? Just a small one now. Say about a $2 purchase, huh?
I don't mean that. I mean, you got to soften the crowd up, not with a joke, but sort of in a saying, like if they're not bidding, just tell them if they're dead, why don't they lay down? Or...
That's a nice joke, I think, to tell them.
Or that they
would... Have any of them ever taken you up on that offer? How does an auction work, Mr. Porter?
Well, you bring up an article and you explain it. For instance, if you're selling a cow, a piece of furniture, diamond ring, or anything like that, you explain it. And tell
you
them
have
it
to
takes...
explain a cow to the audience? How do you explain a cow? I'd like to hear. How many bids are needed to sell an item?
Two bids, sir. One bid doesn't make an auction.
Well, how do you know when to stop the bidding?
Well, when they quit bidding.
This is after you tell them to lie down on the floor and drop dead? Is that... Where do you do your hawking or auctioneering?
Well, I auction at Auction City. And
there is really a city called Auction City?
Yes, sir. It's the biggest one in the world.
Well, I'm kind of curious to hear you give your pitch. Suppose I got a $1,000 diamond ring here and I want you to sell it for me. Now, you go ahead and sell it.
All right. Now, here's a very gorgeous diamond ring, ladies and gentlemen. What are you going to give for it? All right. Now, $25 bid now. $30 now. $30 bid now. $5 now. $30 bid now. $40 more. Now, ladies and gentlemen.
You forgot to say drop dead, huh? I notice you raise your hand when you're doing that chanting. Why do you do that? Do you want to ask a question?
No. It helps you pick up bids.
Oh, I thought maybe you want to go to the bid room, huh? Well, Irene, I'm nuts about typesickery. I've never gone square dancing. Could you describe a typical dance?
Well, you want an easy one or a complicated one?
Well, say about medium, huh? Tail loose, Irene, huh?
Well, how about...
Throw your inhibitions out the window.
Well, the first and third couples lead out to the right in circle four. And they go once around, then the working gents go home...
Did you say the working gents go home?
Yeah.
Well, then who do they dance with? You've only started, and the men leave already.
And the girls, their partners, are left on the side with the other two gents in two lines of three.
Well, there's two gents that didn't go home, huh? They don't like it at home, huh? Well, tell me, golly curtsy, could you call a square dance?
Well, I might give you just the way one might start. Okay. You always start out with an alum and left and a grand right and left, you know. So you might start out, well, swing your honey high and low when you keep on swinging that calico. Now it's alum and left with the old left hand. Right to your honey, go right and left grand. Hand over hand all around that ring and a hand over hand with the dear little thing. And you beat your honey and palm it in.
That's pretty good. I kind of like that, huh? Now, suppose you want to set up an auction across the street from a square dance. And you wanted to take that crowd away from it. Now, how about you starting your auction and you do your square dance. And let's see how the two... Now, 1, 2, 3, go!
All right, now, 75
in
now,
$80
more, $80 bid
now.
Quiet! anybody wants to make a phone call, this is the time to do it, right? Well, I've learned a lot about America tonight, and it won't be long before we're investigated. Now, you're going to play Bet Your Life. If you beat the other couples, you'll get a crack at the $1,500 question. I can't tell you how much they won, but George is offstage to remind our listeners.
The policeman and the librarian are still ahead with $160.
Here we go. You have $20. Let's see Ohio can build you $20. You selected famous animals as your category. Okay, how much of the 20 are you going to try? And talk right into the microphone and loud.
$10.
What animal do you associate with Lady Godiva?
Horse.
A horse is correct.
On the way with $30.
I'd rather associate with Lady Godiva than the horse. Okay, now you got $30. Remember, you're going for $1,500 tonight. How much of the 30 will you try?
25 is better.
Okay, 25.
What kind of animals do you associate with the Pied Piper?
Mice.
Rats.
They're climbing. They have $55, Groucho.
Well, they're both rodents, so I guess we'll give you. How much you going to bet? You have $55.
45.
$45. What animal do you associate with Jonah?
Whale.
Whale is right.
They're really climbing. They have $100.
Well, that was a whale of a fine answer. Now, you have $100, and here's your last chance to beat the other couple. How much of the 100 will you bet? You're going to shoot the works? What animal do you associate with Romulus and Remus?
Wolf.
A wolf is right.
And they wind up with $200. And that means the auctioneer and the square dance caller get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,500 question. And here is the auctioneer and the square dance caller, the winning couple, all ready for the $1,500 question, Groucho.
How about it, kids? You nervous?
Slightly.
You're both professional talkers now. This is the time to talk up. All right, here we go for $1,500. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on one single answer between you, so think carefully and please, no help from the audience. Here it is. Abraham Lincoln was our tallest president, standing 6 feet four in his stocking feet. For $1,500, tell me, who was our shortest president? What's the answer you two have decided upon?
Ulysses Grant?
No, I'm sorry. It was James Madison, who was 5 feet four. So that means the big question next week will be worth $2,000. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $200 in the quiz. Congratulations and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production. Transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith.
And from January of 1950, it's been Groucho Marx starring in You Bet Your Life. In a moment, we'll return with some adventure and intrigue with Frank Sinatra starring in Rocky Fortune. That as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Rocky Fortune had all the earmarks of a Rush production, except that its star was Frank Sinatra. Sinatra was in a slump then. The impact from Here to Eternity hadn't yet been felt. That was, of course, in 1953. So Sinatra took this part, lasting just a year on NBC. It was sustained during that time, and in the title role, Sinatra was a footloose and fancy-free young man who drifted from one adventurous job to another, put together by the same team responsible for the popular science fiction series X-1. The scripts by Ernest Canoy and George Lefferts got Fortune Sinatra into all kinds of trouble. He worked at a museum and found a body in a sarcophagus. He worked as a truck driver and had to haul nitro over a bumpy road. He even took a job as a bodyguard for a pro football player, which proves ultimately you can get away with anything on radio. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Frank Sinatra starring in Rocky Fortune and The Case of Insurance Fraud from October of 1953. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Presents Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and frequently unemployed young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of guy who can't stay put. I get restless. Give me a nice soft job, a buck in my pocket, and a meal ticket, and one will get you 10. I'll quit the job, lose the buck on the GGs, and exchange the meal ticket for a train ticket. In tech last week, for instance, the employment agency sends me down to Houston Street for a job as a chauffeur. Hey, Mac, this 159 Houston?
And what do you want?
Somebody wants to hire a chauffeur.
A chauffeur?
I made a joke?
You take a look around this neighborhood, mister. Who you think got money for a chauffeur? Not even for food, he got money.
Look, all I know is the agency got a call for a chauffeur. 5'9", thin, chauffeur's license, must be able to wear pre-cut uniform.
And you got the wrong place.
159 Houston, sixth floor.
This is 159 Houston. My name is Dick Koenig. I'm the janitor. You take a look how many floors we got, eh?
Maybe they meant fifth floor. I better go up.
Yeah, you go ahead. Let me know if you get the job, eh?
This don't look like chauffeur land to me, but I figure I already blew a subway token to get here, so I leg it up four flights of stairs left over from a Charles Adams cartoon. As I am rounding the turn at flight number 5, a funny-looking little guy steps out of the shadows.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah?
You got change for a buck.
Sure, here.
Thanks.
Hey.
Huh?
Where's the clam?
Here.
Oh. Now, I've been rolled before, but this guy works on my skull like he's a Sherman tank in the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. When I come to, I'm in a white room with iron grillwork in the windows. It's morning, which means I made an evening of it. Alongside my bed stands a gorilla in a white coat. I figure this place for a pad at Bellevue. I am mistaken.
Okay, take it easy, Steve.
Oh.
How do you feel this morning?
Oof.
You've had a couple of bad nights, Steve.
A couple? What day is this?
Tuesday.
Holy smokes. I've been out since Saturday.
Last week you were pretty good. Only a couple of lapses.
Did you say last week?
That's right, Steve.
The name is Rocky. Rocky Fortune.
You're not going to start that again, are you, Steve?
Start what?
That Rocky Fortune bit. Dr. Harris wouldn't like it.
Listen. Oh, what a hangover.
Take it easy.
Look, where am I, Buster?
Mount Kenzie Rest Home.
Mount Kenzie. Is that in the Bronx?
It's near Denver.
Denver? Denver, New York?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay, buddy, if the joke's over, I'll take my clothes and get out of here.
Joke, Steve?
Joke, Jake. Give me the clothes.
I'm afraid I can't do that. Not without Dr. Harris's order.
Will you tell a good doctor that Rocky Fortune wants to have a word with him?
Now, if you're going to insist on that, Steve, I'm afraid we'll have to try the treatment again.
What treatment?
Come along.
Take the hands off, Buster. You're etching the epidermis.
You coming along?
If I can help it.
Okay.
Okay. Ryan's a big guy in the judo department, besides which they got me drugged like a hypochondriac with a third-degree hangnail. He drags me into a white tile room and starts to massage my head with a fist like a sledgehammer. Only this bum's got a new wrinkle. First he puts a pail on my head and then he hits the pail. After 20 minutes of this, I begin to feel like the main bell on St. Mary's Christmas morning. Just when I think I can't take it anymore, a gray-haired guy with a scarred face ambles in.
All right, Johan, all right. That's enough. Take the pail off his head.
Oh.
How do you feel, Stephen?
Oh, just dandy.
Johan is so impulsive.
Repulsive.
Would you like a cigarette?
Yeah. How about get me out of this polo coat?
Yes, in a moment. First, I want to see if you've come to your senses.
Look, would you mind telling me what this is all about? One minute I'm being rolled in a hallway in New York City, and the next minute I wake up in Denver, Colorado.
Stephen, you've been here at Mount Kenzie for 8 years.
My name is Rocky, born Rocco Fortunato.
Your name is Stephen Crandall III. 8 years ago, you were thrown from a polo pony and sustained a head injury. You suffered from delusions. You've been under treatment here.
Come on, Doc. What's the ransom?
Ransom?
How much do I have to raise to get out of here?
You see, Johan, he's still very sick.
Poor fella.
Yes. I'm afraid we'll just have to continue the treatment. All right, Johan, put the pail on his head. Once again, what's your name?
Rocky. And if you don't like it, you can...
All right, Johan. Now we'll try it once more. Your name?
Go jumping.
Johan. Name? That's enough, Johan. Very well, young man, your name?
Stephen.
Stephen what, please?
Stephen Crandall, III.
Your age?
32.
How long have you been here?
8 years.
Why did you come here?
Polo accident.
Good, good. And now once again, your name?
Crandall. Stephen Crandall. By the time Johan and the phony doctor decided to call it a night, they almost had me convinced I was Stephen Crandall. Pardon me, III. They dope me up again for the night, and next morning we cover the course again.
Good morning, Stephen. You slept well?
I had a funny dream.
So?
I dreamed I was a guy named Rocky Fortune. I dreamed I went to apply for a job as a chauffeur in New York City, and somebody sapped me. Pretty funny, huh?
But you understand it was only a dream.
Oh, sure.
I'm happy to hear that. You see, today we have a surprise for you. Can you guess?
I get a new pail. No jokes?
No jokes.
Check. What's the surprise?
You're going home.
I thought you said no jokes.
Well, this isn't a joke, Stephen. I feel you're ready to leave at last. We're going to let you go home, on trial, of course. Now, at the first sign of your delusion that you are someone other than Stephen Crandall, I'm afraid you'll have to return.
When do I fly?
Tomorrow morning. Johan will accompany you.
Another shot of essence of vampire and wake up next morning feeling as strong as a mouse. Before I know what happens, they hustle me into a black Duesenberg and drive toward Denver. About 2 miles out of town, we cut up a winding private road and stop in front of a 28-room bungalow. The doc and Johan walk me to the door, close enough so I can feel the muzzle of Johan's .45 caressing my spine. The door is opened by a medium-sized butler right out of Dickens, with side whiskers and all.
Yes, gentlemen.
Hello, Deems.
Why, it's Dr. Harris and Mr. Stephen. We weren't expecting you so early. Mr. Stephen, how are you?
Speak up, Steve.
Oh, fine, Deems, the old man. Just peachy.
Come in, sir. Come in. Welcome home.
Thanks.
Have a seat, Mr. Stephen. I'll inform Miss Laurie you're home.
burrow myself into a chunk of Chippendale and wait. My head aches and everything looks like a 3D movie without glasses. After a couple of minutes through the blur, I see a dame come floating down the staircase. Even in my weak condition, I can appreciate that she's got more curves than the Jersey Turnpike. She takes one look and comes on like gangbusters.
Steve, darling! Oh, darling.
Sis, this is your wife, Steve. He's still a bit confused, Laura.
Oh, I understand, Doctor. Oh, it's good to have you home, Steve. Kiss me again, darling.
You know something, baby? It's good to be home.
Clinch again, and I am just beginning to enjoy my new identity when Deemsey clears his adenoids and announces...
excuse me, Miss Laura. Judge Harley is calling.
The judge? Here? Well, Dr. Harris, is it all right?
Judge Harley is an old friend of the family, isn't he?
Yes, he's known Stephen since he was a boy.
Well, I think it'll be all right. Just behave yourself, Stephen.
Oh, sure.
Very well, Deems. Show him in.
Yes, ma'am.
Remember, Stephen.
How can I forget?
This way, Your Honor.
Laura. Well, 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 and Stephen. I heard you were coming home, but I didn't expect I'd actually find you here. How are you, my boy?
Great, great. Just good.
Let me look at you. Oh, he's changed, Laura. Thin. Ought to eat more. Well, I expect 8 years in a way. It can change a man.
Even 8 hours can do it.
Very thin indeed. You know, I hate to see a thin man or a woman.
This is Dr. Harris from the rest home and his assistant, Mr. Fiddler. Judge Harley, gentlemen.
How do you do, Judge?
I won't intrude. I just dropped by to see how you were progressing with your personal bankruptcy.
My attorney will file in a week or so, Judge.
Yes, well, it mustn't delay too long, you know. As a friend, I'll hold back the flood as long as I can, but... creditors will be creditors. Yes. Well, I'll be running along. Stephen, it's been wonderful to see you back in the bosom of your family. You've fattened him up now, Laura. Hate to see a thin man or woman. Good day.
Give the judge a couple of seconds to leg down to his black limousine, which I can see through the French window. I toss a haymaker at Joe Hamm and pull an Esther Williams through the casement. I land in a bramble patch, snatch, just as the judge gets to his car. Judge! Judge Harley! Hold it.
Stephen, what is it?
Get in the car. I can't talk now. Come on, let's get going. Come on.
No, but Stephen, I...
Look, I'm not Stephen. My name is Rocky Fortune. This whole thing's a big hoax. Now step on it before they get here.
Of course, Stephen.
Rocky!
Strange, it won't start.
The ignition's not on.
Okay, hold it. Don't try to get away, Steve.
Fat chance.
You okay, Judge?
What happened?
Steve here tried to do away with himself. Right out of the window. Lucky it was the first floor.
What was he telling me about being Rocky something or other?
Oh, he's Rocky, all right.
Judge, listen. Call the Gridley Employment Agency in New York, will
Steve,
you?
Steve, you know what I got in my pocket. Now, be a good boy and I'll give you some candy.
Okay, man. You win. This time.
Sorry to have troubled you, Judge. Come on, Steve.
I'm glad I was of service. Take good care of Steve now.
Don't worry about that, Judge.
It's thin. Very thin.
Back into the house like a piece of stale mackerel, and the good doctor immediately slips me a needle full of wink and blink and a nod.
Yeah, here we are.
Oh, the poor darling, he's all scratched up. Let me take him up to our room.
Yeah. My dear, you see how unstable he is. I'm afraid he'd better be in a separate room. Johann will stay with him.
But we haven't seen each other for 8 years.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Laura. As his physician,
I... no more physician than I am Steve Crandall. Baby, they're trying to put one over on you. I don't know why.
Johann.
But... yes, doctor.
Johann puts the muscle on me, and I'm locked into the guest room on the second floor. By the time we reach the door, my head feels like the steam room at an all-night Turkish bath. I get my ear on the pillow and pass out.
Rocky.
Hmm?
It's me, Laura.
Hmm.
I've been waiting for you.
I've arrived.
Kiss me, Rocky.
Why not? Say, that's nice perfume.
I'm glad you like it.
Makes me sleepy.
Sleep.
Smells like... smells like marsh gas. Gas. Gotta wake up. Gotta open a window. Come on. Come on, boy. That's the boy. Crawl. Crawl, boy. That's it. Now the chair. Window. Come on, boy.
Steve, what is it? I was in my room and I heard a crash.
Nothing much, baby. Let me get some air.
Well, you're sick.
I ain't healthy. Turn off that gas heater, will you? Where's Johann?
He's downstairs with Dr. Harris. Well, Steve, what happened?
Your friend Johann tried to fit me for a casket, that's all.
Steve?
I am not Steve. Let's get it straight, honey. Before Muscles gets back. My name is Rocky Fortune. I'm a ringer. The doc and Johann are trying to pass me off as your husband. You ought to know better.
I do.
It's a nice time to say so.
Well, I didn't dare. They threatened to murder me.
Okay, let's have it.
My husband committed suicide in their sanatorium some months ago. He carried very heavy life insurance. Naturally, we couldn't collect on a suicide. Johann and the doctor decided that they wouldn't report the death. They got you to take Steve's place.
I begin to get it. I have an accident, you collect double indemnity, and they pry you loose from the money.
They forced me into it.
Okay, we gotta get out of here, baby.
But they'll kill us.
Not if they want me to look like an accident, they won't. I'm worth a lot of loot, kid.
Well, how can we do it?
Is there anybody in the house you can trust?
Deans.
Fine. Get to them, tell them to have a car ready in front of the house in exactly 5 minutes. Where's Johann and the doc?
Downstairs.
Probably give me plenty of time to soak up the ether. Okay, look, go down, tell them I'm lying here dead. When they come up, you get out to the car. Got it?
Yes.
Wish me luck.
Good luck, Steve.
Rocky.
Good luck, Rocky.
As soon as Laura leaves, I fix up a dummy out of pillows and stuff it in the bed. Then I slip out of the room and hide in an alcove about 10 feet away. I wait. A minute later, the doc and Johann come stumbling up the stairs like a thundering herd. Let them rush into the room, take 2 giant steps, and lock the door behind them.
Open that door. Open that door.
Can't hear you, Uncle.
Please, open the door.
Temper, temper.
Open the door, please.
So long, gentlemen. Don't think it hasn't been a pleasure, because it hasn't. I am down the steps like a grasshopper in a granary, and on my way out when I see the telephone and get a sudden inspiration.
Operator.
Operator, I want the municipal courthouse. Judge Harley, it's an emergency.
I'll connect you with information.
I said emergency, baby.
If it's an emergency, baby, I'll give you the hospital.
I'll settle for information. Make it fast. Upstairs, I can hear Johann and the doctor making headway with the door, and I don't have much time to waste on explanations. I need something that'll knock the judge right off his bench and bring him out here in a hurry.
Hello?
Judge Harley?
Yes?
This is Deems, the Crandall butler.
Oh, what is it, Deems?
Master Stevens has just murdered the entire family, sir. He's kidnapping me.
What? What is this? What's that banging noise?
It's dynamite, sir. He's blowing up the house room by room. I think you'd better get out here, sir. Here they come.
Deems?
Bye. I figured this ought to bring him out on the double, so I write a message on the mirror with Laura's lipstick and leap out to the car one jump ahead of the hounds.
Are you all right, Rocky?
Fine.
Well, what took so long?
Had to call my bookmaker to ensure a bet.
What about the doc and Johann?
On the inside, looking out. Head for the local constabulary, deems the old sock.
Yes, sir.
I spend the next few minutes gazing fondly into Laura Crandall's lavender eyes, and she gazes back. I can see the fine blue blood surge through her cheeks, and on her, a blue surge looks pretty good. I'm ready to surrender to the beast in me when Deemsey makes a screaming turn off the main highway and pulls to a stop 10 feet from the edge of a cliff. Hey, what gives?
There's been a car following us, sir.
I didn't see any car.
If I may say so, sir, you weren't paying much attention.
All right, let's get going.
I'm afraid not, sir.
Listen, egghead, I said let's get...
You were saying?
Put down the gun, Deemsey.
I'll give the orders, Mr. Fortune. Get out.
Wait a minute, what is this?
Just step over to the edge of the cliff, if you please.
What if I don't please?
You'd take on weight all of a sudden.
He means it, Rocky.
Okay. Mind if I ask what happens next, or am I being naive?
Next, Mr. Fortune, you accidentally fall off the cliff. The car follows you.
Accident. Double indemnity.
Exactly. Now, turn around.
What makes you think they're going to believe it?
You're suicidal. Even Judge Harley saw you go through a window.
Very neat.
Turn around. We have much time.
Okay.
Laura, push him over. Come on, this is no time to lose your nerve.
Steve, I...
Push him.
I can't do it.
All right. Take the gun. I'll do it myself.
I hear a car.
Stop worrying. All right, Mr. Fortune.
That first step looks like a Lulu.
Get going.
Wait, listen.
A police car. Come on.
Okay, hold it. Hold it or I shoot.
Steve, watch out for the kid. Oh, no.
Grab her.
I've got her. Take it easy, baby.
You all right, Mr. Fortune?
I'll let you know later. Right now, I'm a little numb.
Well, you picked up the car and then lost it again.
What convinced you I was telling the truth when I called?
I know you weren't Stephen Crandall the first time I laid eyes on you. I also know I couldn't do anything about it at the time. When you phoned me before you left the house a few minutes ago, I'd already checked the employment agency in New York City. You're lucky we picked up the car.
What about the guy who fell off the cliff, Judge?
Is he dead, Sergeant?
Well, I didn't have a chance. Who is he?
As far as I know, he's the Crandall butler.
You got it wrong, Judge.
You know him?
I think if you take off those phony side whiskers, you'll find out he's the guy I was supposed to impersonate, Steve Crandall.
What?
Blossom here called him Steve just before he took the Brody.
Laura, is it Stephen?
Yes.
Why did you do this?
We had no money when Steve left the institution. He cooked up this scheme with the doc and Johann to cash in on his own insurance.
Next time I answer an ad for a chauffeur, remind me to make sure they want a live chauffeur, not a corpse.
Tonight, NBC Radio has presented, transcribed... Frank Sinatra, as that footloose and fancy-free young man known as Rocky Fortune. Others in the cast included Francis Urey, Maurice Hart, Jack Mather, Herb Ellis, Stanley Fraser, Lynn Allen, and Stephen Chase. Andrew C. Love directed. Eddie King speaking. Now, to tell you about next week's adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
That's how come I'm back on unemployment insurance again. Not for long, though. Next week, I'll tell you about the next job I had. Steward on a big luxury liner to Bermuda. I figured I'd like to see the ocean, you know. A couple of guys were trying to help me, too. Only they wanted me to see it the hard way. From the bottom.
Next week, then, tune in again when Frank Sinatra returns as Rocky Fortune.
From October 13th of 1953, it's been Frank Sinatra starring in Rocky Fortune and the case of insurance fraud. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this edition of Yesteryear, but join us again next week, and why not invite a friend to listen? Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those exciting days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. Sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery. do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved. Mm-hmm.